to The Divine Breadcrumb with your hosts, Carol Campos and Deb Sorensen. Carol and Deb have always believed the universe helps people on their path by sending signs, clues, or what they call divine breadcrumbs. A divine breadcrumb can create both small and massive shifts in a person's life. On this podcast, Carol and Deb will speak with authors, healers, entrepreneurs, and other amazing people across the globe to discuss these pivotal moments. So get ready to learn, to love, and to laugh. And remember, the universe always provides if you allow it to. Enjoy the show.
Hi, it's Carol, co-host of The Divine Breadcrumb. This episode is brought to you by Carol L. Campos Coaching. Why coach with me when there are so many coaches out there? I do things differently. I don't jump right into your goal. Why? Well, what I've learned is that the subconscious mind is running 90% of the show. That's where we start. We clear any emotional blocks and limiting beliefs first, making sure you know your why and are aligned with where you're headed before tackling your goal. Whether you want to change careers or simply want more joy in your life, I can teach you strategies to help you gain the clarity needed to go where your heart is calling. To get started, I invite you to sign up for a free discovery session at carollcampos.com. Together, let's light your path.
Hi, everybody. This is Deb. Welcome back to The Divine Breadcrumb.
Hi, everyone. It's Carol.
Today, we are talking with Karen Lane, the mama chick half of Two Chicks and a Hammer, which she co-owns along with her daughter, Mina Hawk. Karen and Mina have been renovating homes and revitalizing neighborhoods in Indianapolis, Indiana, since 2007. In 2015, HGTV came calling and the hit show Good Bones was born. Good Bones is currently airing its fourth season and was just renewed for season 5. With humor and unflappable poise, Karen tackles everything from demolition to construction, design, and even thoughtful craft projects to surprise potential buyers. And I'm sure that's only a small part of what she does. But aside from Karen's know-how around renovating homes, Karen brings a kind of spiritual energy to the mix. She truly cares about the homes she touches. We love this. We are so thrilled, Karen, that you could join us today. Welcome.
I am so excited to be here. And I hate to say this, but it's important that I make one correction. Very recently, I made some changes and I am selling my share of the business to my daughter.
Oh, okay.
It's time for the kids to run the world.
There
it's
you go.
For people my generation, in a way. I have a very competent daughter, and I know the yes. company is in good hands. And so I still do the show, but I don't call myself an owner of the business anymore. I'm okay. considered a founder.
Well, congratulations. That's really exciting.
It is. It's a new phase in life, and it gives me some free time. My husband's retired, and it's the right time and it's the right thing, and go kids.
Good. That's great. Carol and I are of the same generation as you, so we do appreciate the reticence to sort of pass the torch, but I think it's a good thing.
It is. It's a good, and you know, change can be difficult.
Yes.
And I think maybe change should be difficult. So you think hard about what you're doing and you make sure you're making the right decision. But luckily, I'm not one of those people who gets really sad about an empty nest or mm-hmm. moving. Now I have open doors to do new things.
That's exciting.
So I'm working on some low-income housing ideas.
Wow.
Because I have this passion for the homeless that I have not been able to put into action. And so we'll see. We'll see where that goes. So maybe I can use my retired free time to just do good. That would be so fun. Oh my God.
That would be. That's sort of the ultimate goal, you know, that whole winning yeah. the lottery, winning the lottery fantasy. So then you can just do good with it all.
Yeah. One of the nice things about, we're finally in the income curve now where I actually have a little money saved, which has never been the case in my life. So now I can make financial donations.
Nice.
To our local children's hospital, things that I have a passion for, I can actually give money to, because I don't have the time, unfortunately. That still hasn't
right.
happened. I don't have that much time. But it's been very gratifying for me, is to be able to put my money where my heart is.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
That is great. So jumping in, you have such a strong passion for Indianapolis. How did you end up there?
You know, as with a lot of girls, the story is I followed a man.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved here because I was in love, and then he dumped me.
Aww.
And then I was here. No, yeah, I was sad at the time. I curled up in a ball and cried because he dumped me with a post-it note.
Oh, no.
I mean, oh, my gosh.
Lame. That was lame. Like, all right, then you realize he's done me a favor.
Yeah.
Because if he doesn't want to be with me, then it's not right. So
right.
move on. And I had already found a job and an apartment, and I was going to school. So my parents were from the Midwest. It felt like home. I got to see my grandmother pretty regularly. She lived in Richmond. So I'd go visit her once a week. And that's how I ended up in Indianapolis.
Wow.
And then I married my first husband. All my kids were born here. And so it feels like home.
Right.
You know, where your kids are born feels like home. I'm rooted here now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. So you started your professional career as an attorney, which I think will surprise a lot of people. What was that world like for you, and how did you go from there to renovating houses?
It's like everything in my life. It just sort of happened. I didn't have a plan. I was in business school, and one of my friends said, do you want to take the LSAT with me? I said, which is the aptitude test for law school.
Mm-hmm.
We love tests. I said, sure, I'll take the test with you. That'll be fun. And I did really well on the test. And so I went to law school, because my dad had always said I was so able to argue any point of anything that I should be a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all right, it's, you know, it's 30 years later, and I'm remembering what my dad said. All right, I'll be a lawyer. And I'm still able to do that. I can argue any point of anything.
That's great.
And I found my home in the criminal justice system, because it is the work of justice. And
right.
trying to find the right thing to have happen in a situation. And I'm a big believer in restorative justice.
Mm.
And so when I worked for victims, that was a lot of what I tried to help. I worked with sex crimes victims,
wow.
children and adults. Sexual and physical abuse. And that was most of my career in the prosecutor's office. But then I also worked as a criminal defense attorney in my own practice. And these people, the people that I worked with, they didn't become criminals. One day they didn't wake up and say, oh, I'm going to go hurt someone.
Right.
They have a paucity in their own life. They had experiences in their own life. And there's something good in them too.
Mm-hmm.
And my goal was always to make sure that they were treated fairly, that their rights were protected, and that the consequences were fair. Because it's not about finding someone not guilty, unless they're actually not guilty, then that's nice.
Right.
And being a lawyer for me was wonderful, because I have such a disorganized brain that a world of rules and order is a really happy place for me. You know, I go into court, I know what the judge is like, I know what the law is, I know what the other attorneys are like, I know what my facts are, I know what my client or the opposing, you know, the defendant is like,
mm-hmm.
and I know what's going to happen. Everything is very easy to predict, because if you do your job, it's
right.
very easy to predict. So I liked that. And going from that world of order to a world where you're running for the exits with your hair on fire was really hard for me. Trying to find order in reality TV is like a needle in a haystack.
Oh, I can imagine.
And construction's the same way. We know something's going to go wrong. We've
mm-hmm.
done this long enough that we're aware. We're never sure at the outset what's going to go wrong. That's always a surprise.
Yeah.
Sometimes we have a clue, but then sometimes we don't. And so, yeah, there's always something going wrong. There's no certainty except we have a skill set and an approach that we know we can handle what goes wrong.
Right. Which comes with the experience. right? You've been there, done. You know, you know how to manage it. You know how to handle it.
Yeah. It's all opportunities. There's no problems. There's just opportunities. Oh, the house fell down. Well, I guess we get to build a new house. Yay!
Right.
And, it's all in the perspective.
Absolutely. And that's just such a great way to look at it. Hopefully save some stress.
Yeah. There's no crying in construction. Okay. Sometimes there's crying in construction. I'm not going to lie. I cried one day when we were not able to save some windows, and I get very attached to things.
Mm.
And, I went down in the cellar and cried. I cried.
Aww. I can relate to that though. Getting attached to the thing, you know, because it's the personality.
It is. And the windows of a house are like our eyes.
Mm. Yeah.
They're how we see into the soul of the house. And everybody who's ever lived in that house mm-hmm. left an impression behind. And you can feel that when you walk into a house.
Absolutely.
When you can feel good feelings, you feel bad feelings, and you wonder, where did those come from? And I don't know, but this is the way I tell the story, is the people who left energy behind, they left good energy or bad energy, and you feel that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
When you lose your windows, it's sad.
Well, that actually leads me sort of into my next question. I've been a big fan of the show since it began, but the episode that prompted my contacting you was this season's episode 2, titled New House, Old Spirit. A quick summary for our listeners. There was no way to save the house, and it had to be torn down. You took a moment on camera to speak to the soul of the house, to explain what you were doing, and to give it shelter in a small house figurine that you had. This really moved me. I've watched the episode several times now, and it still moves me. The moment felt very private and a little vulnerable. What inspired you to share this with your TV audience, and what's been the reaction from your audience?
So first of all, you need to know I don't usually watch the show.
Okay.
Because the few times I watch it, I see myself and I think, who let me go out of the house like that? You know, did no one tell me don't do that? So I try not to. But I do have social media. And, you know, I have an Instagram, Twitter, mm-hmm. and Facebook. And so I get commentary.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to give credit. That was not my idea.
Okay.
One of my social media followers, I was told me a story, and we really bonded, and it was just over social media. And she was the one who suggested, when you have something like this happen, give the soul of the house a place to rest during the construction. And that really resonated with me. And I thought, that will solve so many problems.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know this, even to me, it sounds crazy saying it, but there is an energy to a house. It exists. I've experienced it.
Yes.
And I felt like it can't hurt to try this. It can't hurt to talk to the energy of the house and give it a place to rest. And I really was not comfortable having that filmed because it did feel very, very private and intimate. And it's a conversation with me in the house. And I have those conversations with every house.
Mm.
And I never let anybody hang around when I do that because it is intimate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I go through every house, every single room, and do a little blessing ceremony when we're about to move furniture in, because that's the kind of energy I want in the house. Mm-hmm. I want this peaceful, happy, welcoming, understanding. So it was really uncomfortable to have a camera on me while that was happening.
Mm.
And I felt very, very exposed. And I have not watched that episode, but people seem to really like that.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to resonate with a lot of people from what I got on social media. And, you know, worst case scenario, I'm just a small slice of crazy pie and people think I'm a little crazy. And that's fine because I have this reputation for being a little crazy that I try to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
No one knows what I'm going to do next, so they're always on guard around me. She might just do a spell, you don't know. So just don't make her mad.
Well, I think it resonates with a lot of people because more and more people are kind of opening up to this kind of thing. And you talked a lot about the energy of the house. And I was curious, when you've entered a house where the energy doesn't feel good, is there anything you do in particular? Because I've had people, a lot of people say, you know, they've moved a house or an apartment and they'll come to me, well, what should I do about this? Do you have advice for people when you're feeling an energy is not so great? Do you have kind of a little ceremony that you do, it sounds like?
Yes. And I'll tell you, we had one house and I'm pretty sure it was the season 2 house and this did not make TV. Mina is, I feel like I'm very sensitive to the energy around me, and Mina is not usually like that. I'll say, do you feel that? And she'll say, I don't know what you're talking about. But we walked into a room in this house, and the whole world began to spin and tip.
Wow.
And right. Mina felt it too, and it was a very terrifying feeling. It was bad. When we got to the point in construction where I could go back in the room, I did all kinds of reading to figure out what is this. Mm-hmm. There's got to be someone else out in the world who has felt this. And the word that I found was portal. That's what it felt like. It felt like I was going to spin and fall through the earth.
Right.
Wow.
So I made a salt circle around it because that's supposed to be able to contain. Mm-hmm. And this stuff is just what other people say. I don't know if it works. But I feel like intention is very important.
I was just going to say that.
I don't think it matters if it's salt or oil or candles. I think it's that my intention is that there be peace here. And whatever's causing this disturbance, let it be at peace.
Mm.
So that's the ceremony. That's the gist of the ceremony is the intention. Mm-hmm. And there's been no problems. So I don't know. I don't have answers for those things.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds like, as you said, you know, setting the intention and going through that does have an impact. Carol and I have explored all, you know, a lot of these kinds of things, and it makes a difference.
Absolutely. I had an office that I worked in that was, again, I feel like a crazy person, but it was haunted, and I wasn't the only person who saw the ghost. And I happened to go to New Orleans. And the lady who lived across the cemetery gave me a prayer to say. She said, you never talk to the ghost.
Hmm.
You don't engage with it because you don't know what's behind it.
Hmm.
It might be a perfectly benign energy, but you might be opening a door to something that's not. So we said this prayer. I tend to think of, my son calls me a born again Catholic. I believe in a power of the universe that can flow through us. And some mm-hmm. people call it God. Some people call it other things. I don't need to name it. People who resonate with that concept of there's a greater power in the universe than me. So this prayer is about calling on that greater power and helping whatever the disturbance is to move towards that power and out of this realm.
Mm.
And the ghost went away.
Great.
Yeah. Which
yeah.
is, I think, good for the ghost.
Absolutely.
And it was good for us because it was terrifying. I mean, pictures flew off the wall.
Wow.
We saw the ghost moving through the space. It was scary because it was very real.
Mm.
And ghosts are supposed to be stories that you tell to one another around a campfire, not something you see in your waking life.
Exactly. Well, and it sounds like you're very sensitive to these type of energies. Was that always the case? Did you have that as a child as well?
I must have. Although I don't remember, because my mother, when I was very young, 7 or 8, gave me a book on witchcraft and how to use. And it was very, very dumbed down and simple, but talking about signs and mirrors and using intention to exert your power. And it was good. It wasn't, you're going to cast a bad spell on someone.
Right.
It was just about using your power for good.
Hmm.
And how you manifest that and how you can read signs to let you know you're going in the right direction and you are helping people.
Exactly. And that's what the Divine Breadcrumb is all about, is following those signs.
Oh.
So switching gears a little bit, I have a very close relationship with my adult daughter, and clearly you have a close relationship with Mina. But for so many, that mother-daughter relationship can be challenging. What impact did working together have on your relationship, and how did you guys handle the more challenging days?
Well, historically, before the show, Mina's way of coping with frustration or stress or relationship problems with me was to go to her corner. So she would just disengage. And I understood that's what it was. I didn't get upset. I understood that was her mechanism for dealing with it. And then when she was ready, she would come back. And then we would have our relationship again. And just like literally physically disengage. She wouldn't talk to me. She wouldn't see me. She just wouldn't engage. And I never worried about that. I just knew that's what she needed to do. I let her. I didn't try and reengage very aggressively. I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. It's fine. And I've never been upset with her need to do that. And because we work together every day now, it's harder to do that. It's harder to physically disengage and use that coping mechanism. So basically, she has limited hours of the day where she can ignore me if she's if she's having trouble dealing with me. That's the situation. So the way we deal with it is when we're not doing well together, because every relationship, you have times where I don't want to talk to you right now. I love you. I just don't want to talk to you right now. Okay. Just let me work through this and then I'll come back. So we just have limited hours to do that now where we can, you know, part ways, go to our corners, think about where did that come from? What do I want to do about it? And then come back together. So sometimes when we look happy together, we're acting. That happens. If you see us unhappy with each other on the show, that's real. That has started seeping through a little bit more.
And I think you hit on a key point is the fact that just not to take it personally, because with my daughter, it's similar. When she's done, she's done, and she will just isolate herself. And I think that that's one of the keys for mother and daughters. It's like, don't think of it as, oh, she's, you know, she hates me. She doesn't love me anymore. It's just somebody needs time. That's it.
I took a class when my kids were little called Systematic Training for Effective Parenting. And that was the best thing I could have ever done, because it made me feel like I'm on the same team with my kids. And I see a lot of parents who act as though their kids are the enemy. And you know what? I brought these kids into the world. I'm on their team. I want them to grow up to be healthy, happy adults. How do I help them do that? So this idea of we're all on the same team helps me see. And, you know, when they were little, I was the team member with the most information. So most of my job is to share information and safety. Now, that's my job. But now that they're all adults, my job is to recognize, oh, this team member needs some peace and quiet right now. That's fine. That's fine. I don't have to feel hurt by that. And I don't have to react and get defensive to that. Because kids, little kids, do all kinds of things that as a parent, you want to feel defensive.
Why
are you doing this to me?
But if you
turn it around and say, what need are you meeting of yourself, you know, of your own? It's a whole different conversation inside your own head and out in the world with that kid.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, so very true. So I know Carol has thought about working with her daughter. What advice can you share about working with your children?
I think that kind of what we just talked about is recognizing it's not always about you. Sometimes the other person's just having a bad day. And I think a simple question that you can ask is, in any situation, is there something that I can do for you right now that would help? That's an opening to a conversation. And if the answer is, just leave me have peace and quiet and I'll talk to you tomorrow. Okay, thanks. And you let them have that.
Right.
I mean, I did that once with my youngest daughter, who now works for the company, when she stomped up the stairs and slammed her door. And I was just baffled because that was not her style. And she just started being a teenager. So I waited about 20 minutes. I went upstairs and I said, when that happens to you, when you feel that way, is there something that I can do to help? And you don't have to tell me right now. And I think catching her that early with that information changed her whole approach to adolescence.
Wow.
Because she came to me and said, no, I just needed to stomp up the stairs and slam the door. I was mad and I needed to pound on something, and I did, and I'm fine. And it was that simple. just put myself on her team and say, is there something I can do?
Yeah, great advice.
It's so it's ridiculously hard to do, even though it's so simple, because you want to feel defensive.
Yeah.
You know, if someone lashes out at you, like, all right, that didn't feel good. How do I swallow how I feel right now and try and be there for the other person? But the more you do that, the easier it gets, and the easier it gets for the other person too, when you're having a bad moment, because you've shown, you've modeled the behavior that works.
Yeah.
So true.
The other thing I think is, especially my younger daughter and I, because she works for the business now, we shift gears and we make it very clear. This is a business conversation. And then 10 minutes later, we're done with the business conversation. I say, can we switch to personal? There's something personal. And when we're having business conversations, there's no crying in construction, right? There's no feelings about business. This is an opportunity. We need to look through how to make everything work here. Somebody needs something. How are we going to make that happen? And it's business. It's different than when it's my daughter who is sad or needs help with something. It's just different.
Yeah, that's interesting. And that's a great way to look at it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mentioned earlier that I believe we are all sort of part of the same generation.
Yeah.
You recently just finished working on the iconic Brady Bunch house. What was that experience like?
When the very first day, when we're all lined up greeting the cast members, all, you know, Maureen McCormick and everybody, I was overwhelmed with emotion and it surprised me. I was actually crying because growing up, Mike and Carol Brady were the kind of parents I wanted my parents to be.
Oh, yeah,
and
definitely.
The way the siblings interacted was the way I wanted to interact. They created a role model for me. They modeled behavior for me that I could adopt. And my parents weren't like that. My parents were very different from that. But it showed me that that could exist in the world. And I now know that it's TV. But that can't exist in the world.
Yes.
It can. And the respect and understanding, they were on the same team with their kids. They wanted their kids to succeed and be happy and get along and do all, and they were there to help them at the same time that they were being the adults. So it was, to meet all these people who had changed my life so profoundly was very overwhelming. And I found out that they hear that a lot, that a lot of people in our age group were very affected by that show in exactly the same way, which gave me a new respect for television, which I kind of thought was a vast wasteland.
Yeah.
I thought, no, television really did do something for me as a kid. And so I can understand when people tell me that my show makes a difference. I don't dismiss that anymore. I take that seriously because it can make a difference.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that show, as well as others, were a huge part of my childhood. And you talking about how you got emotional and how you didn't expect to be, I think that's so common. When I think of any of the shows I watched when I was younger, and if I ever got the chance to meet someone in those shows, I've always gotten emotional. And Deb and I have often had the conversation that, you know, if we had ever met, let's say, Mr. Rogers before he passed, I would have been bawling. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Well, and every single one of the members of the Brady cast are just as nice as can be. They're wonderful, wonderful, wonderful people. They're delightful. And they were lovely to meet and lovely to work with. And it was really a peak experience in my life.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Yeah, I'm so glad. Yeah. It's always such a bummer when you hear that people aren't as nice as what you thought. So I'm so glad that they all are.
No, remarkably wonderful people. And I think it's tough, especially for people who started TV as kids. That's a weird world to live in as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
So it's to their credit that they have become these wonderful adults.
That's awesome. And I'm sure seeing the house was probably also pretty magnificent.
Well, it's so crazy because on the show, you see the outside of the house, and then the rest of it's on a soundstage.
Right.
That cannot actually fit inside the house.
Wow.
So and there are things that were in the real house, not the soundstage. There were windows and exterior decoration that you never saw and that cannot be part of the new house that matches the soundstage. So I rented a truck and I brought those things home and they are in my yard now.
That's great.
Awesome.
We're building a greenhouse and there's these 6-foot square windows that were in the real house that are going to go into the greenhouse walls, which is pretty exciting for me.
How cool.
I love that.
Yeah. And then there's a fountain. There's a bronze fountain in the front yard and some cherubs and stuff that I wouldn't necessarily ever have bought myself.
Right.
To save and keep and have, you know, and it's not about ownership. It's about preserving and honoring.
Mm-hmm.
And so that still exists in the world somewhere, that part of whatever you want to call it makes me really happy.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
I love that.
Oh my gosh. I can't believe how fast the time is going. So Karen, before we wrap up, we like to ask our guests, like, what was one of the biggest divine breadcrumbs in your life? So just for your benefit and for the benefit of any new listeners, the definition of a divine breadcrumb is seemingly out of the blue, and often when you need it most, the universe will provide a clue, a stepping stone, a prompt, a serendipity that leads you to something that helps you on the next leg of your journey. It could come in the form of a book, a class, a workshop, a chance meeting, a song on the radio. The possibilities are endless. So for you, Karen, can you think of any big divine breadcrumb moments in your life?
I'm actually starting to cry remembering this.
No.
I was sitting in church by myself because nobody goes to church with me. And a woman walked past me. I was at the end of the pew and she was going to sit further down front. And I noticed her coat. It was gorgeous. Mm. And she was an elderly lady. She had steel gray hair. And then the next thing I noticed was the hem was pinned up.
Mm.
And that she had these leather bows on her leather shoes that were taped on with Scotch tape.
Hmm.
So my first thought is that coat is gorgeous. And my next thought is she needs some love. Somebody needs to, you know, fix those bows and hem up her coat. And then God said she needs a ride to church.
Hmm.
And it was as clear as day. She needs a ride to church. And I thought, well, that's weird. You know what? I grew up in a world where God doesn't talk to people. He talked to people in the Bible. He doesn't talk to us now, right? That doesn't happen.
All right.
And I conceive him as a he, but I don't know why culturally he. I'm not trying to put that on anyone else. After church is over and Father Paul's making the announcement, he says, one of our parishioners needs a ride to church.
Mm.
And I about lost my mind.
Wow.
So I find Father Paul in the vestry and I say, the lady in the pink coat is mine. He said, what are you talking about? I said, you made an announcement that someone needs a ride to church, and it's the lady in the pink coat. And he just looked baffled because he knew that her name was Florence, was wearing a pink coat, but he couldn't figure out how I knew that that was who needed the ride to church because he hadn't said that.
Mm-hmm.
So he gave me her contact information, and I drove her to church every Sunday for a couple years.
Wow.
She was in declining health. And the first time you poop in church, you don't get to go to church anymore because it's uncomfortable for everyone, including you.
Oh, so boy.
Then I would go to church with her in the nursing home where she lived.
Mm.
And even after she wasn't interested in going to church anymore and she'd just stay in her room, I would just sit with her and we would just hold hands and look out the window. She would talk about whatever she wanted to talk about. And we had a conflict, not her and I, but her cousin, her closest relative left town to go to Europe and put a DNR on Florence's chart. And when she went to the hospital, they weren't going to resuscitate her. And I thought to myself, he's a horrible human being. I need to be her guardian. So I went through the guardianship process. And what I didn't know is that Florence is a millionaire because I've been buying her pantyhose because she didn't have a pantyhose.
Yeah.
And what her cousin didn't know is that I didn't know. He thought I knew she had money, so he thought I was after her money.
Oh,
so going through this conflict in the guardianship process, we both came to know what we didn't know.
Mm.
And then Clarence and I got along, and when Florence finally did pass, he gave me a statue of the Pieta, which had been hers.
Mm.
And so I have this lovely reminder of being with someone through the process of passing, which is a beautiful, beautiful opportunity. It's the hardest thing you can do, mm-hmm. is be with someone while they die and watch them dying.
Yeah.
And it's the best thing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
It made me not afraid of death. It changed everything for me. Because it was so clearly a passage,
mm-hmm.
not an end. And my husband has stage 4 metastatic cancer, which he's being treated for, and he's doing really, really well.
Oh, good.
And I'm not afraid of death.
Mm.
We live our life. We don't sit around moaning about, oh, yeah, you got tumors. Well, no, we're going to live. We're going to have, it makes every day so full to live beside death.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so that's a huge, that's not a breadcrumb. That's the whole factory.
Yes.
That's the bread factory.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. As we call it, a cosmic crouton.
Yeah. Cosmic crouton. And there have been other times since then where I've heard the voice and it's told me what to do. And I just do it. I mm-hmm. just do it. I don't argue with it. And that's where my love for the homeless came. That was the voice. It said, feed him.
Mm.
And I had an argument with the voice, of course, but now that's what I do. If someone asks for food, they get it.
Right.
And it's just that simple.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that story. I mean, I think that's what's so important is honoring when you do hear the voice, or whether it's a voice or whether it's a sign, to really take it and run with it. Because I think so many people are so apt to say, well, that was just a coincidence, or just kind of poo-poo it. And I think it's so important to really run with it.
There are no coincidences. I'm sorry. There just aren't.
That's
what
we think
too. There are no coincidences.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there's so much meaning all around us if we just stop and look and listen and connect.
Absolutely.
Connecting with other people and mm-hmm. not judging, not looking at him and going, oh, you're homeless. You must be a failure. No, he has Mm-mm. a story too.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
I don't know how you got there, but I can be your friend wherever you are.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we all have a story that can impact someone. So thank you so much for sharing that. Really, really impactful. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes.
Thank you for inviting me. You ladies are wonderful.
Thank you.
Wonderful. And the time has flown. I feel like I've been talking to you for 2 minutes.
Yeah. This is what usually happens. It just flies by. So you have an open invitation, Karen. So, whatever your next project is, or your, the next thing that means something to you, if you want to share it, you just let us know, because you are always
welcome. I'm going to keep this email in the saved thing, and I'm going to keep you in my mind, because there are so many things that happen,
mm-hmm.
that big and small, you just think, okay. Right. And it feels like I'm in the flow. There's this song that I love. We're all living beneath the Great Big Dipper. We're all washed by the very same rain.
Mm.
We're all swimming in the stream together, some in power and some in pain. And there's more, but that's the part that I just always think, we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm.
We're in it together. And there are so many connections to be made and so much to gain from those connections.
Mm-hmm.
There's a passage in the Bible, Jesus says, you ask me, where is heaven? Is it here? Is it there? I tell you, it is right here.
Mm.
Might have meant was, he is the way to heaven. But what he might have meant is, we make our own heaven or hell.
Yes.
We live.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And I believe that. I mean, Jesus may be the way to heaven too, but my belief is, I'm creating my own heaven right here,
mm-hmm.
by how I talk to people and how I share with people, how I do what I can do.
I absolutely agree with that.
What a beautiful way to end.
Yes, I agree.
Oh, you ladies are wonderful. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Just such a pleasure to chat with you and meet you and hear about things other than just the show and sort of just that little that little piece of you that we get to see.
And it is. The show is just, it's that ride came along for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get on the ride and you find the reason.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Another divine breadcrumb, I would say.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely.
So everybody, you can catch the show on our website, thedivinebreadcrumb.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. If you like the show, please share it with your friends, post a review, send us an email. We love hearing from you. Karen, thank you again. It was such a pleasure.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you very much.
And thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.